This episode of the Out of Bounds podcast is brought to you by Fisher's Keys. Hello, hello, hello. This is the Out of Bounds podcast. My name is Adam Jabber, and we've got episode number 131 today for you. This episode is with Sophia Schwartz. Sophia is an ex-US ski team member in the mogul discipline, as well as a couple others. She is a Fisher Skis athlete now, and she is skiing big mountain stuff in Jackson Hole for the most part. So we talk about what her season last year was like, kind of growing up in the mogul discipline and moving on to big mountain stuff and what that's like, what that kind of transition is like. And we talk about her new film, Jack of All Trades. Jack of All Trades is like kind of goes through three different kinds of objectives that she set for herself going into last season. And it takes you through her going after those objectives. So I hope you guys enjoy the conversation that we had. Sophia is awesome. And if you haven't seen, I'll include the links to her season edit and to Jack of All Trades below in the show notes. I don't know if it's below on Spotify or above, or I don't know. Anyway, I'll include all that stuff as well as on the website. So you can go there for all Sophia Schwartz type content. She absolutely rips. Like, I, to be perfectly honest, before I had like started really doing some research on her a few weeks ago, I hadn't really heard of Sophia Schwartz, and now I'm like watching these edits and I'm like, holy shit, this girl absolutely rips. Like, it's insane. So I'd highly recommend you go watch her edit and Jack of All Trades as well. Before we jump into the episode, we have a sponsor for today. Ski Town All-Stars is our sponsor for this episode. If you don't know Ski Town All-Stars, they are the very best at making fun hats, custom hats, all kinds of different stuff. When it comes to headwear, they make beanies, flat brims, truckers. They make like these cool insulated like little foam hats as well. I mean, they do everything. Chris was one of the first guests on the show like 100 episodes ago, and they're an awesome crew of people, and it's insane how much they've grown over the past few years. They're a pretty new company, but they figured it out. They've definitely figured it out. So we have a promo code for you. It's Out of Bounds for the Ski Town All-Stars website. You can save 20% off on purchase of a hat. Obviously, it's a great gift, especially the kind of hats that Ski Town makes for the loved ones in your life. So go get that. It's at skitownallstars.com. There's a link below that'll bring you directly there, and or you can use the promo code Out of Bounds to save 20%. So please go ahead and use that, and yeah, follow us on social media. It's at Out of Podcast. Follow Sophia on Instagram. That's at Sophia Schwartz. And yeah, let us know what you thought of this episode. Leave a review on iTunes or Apple Podcasts if you listen there. If you listen on Spotify, I don't know. Like I said last time, just tell me you love me sometimes. So without further ado, here is Sophia Schwartz. Sophia, perfect. Tell people who you are. Tell them a little bit about yourself, and then we'll go from there.
Yeah, thanks so much, Adam. My name is Sophia Schwartz. I currently live in Jackson, Wyoming. I've been here for a full 3 years and loving it. Pretty transient. Grew up, born in Telluride, Colorado. Moved to Idaho. Moved to New Hampshire. Moved back to Colorado. And stumbled upon Jackson as home when I decided to retire from the U.S. mogul team and become a big mountain skier. So it's been a fun adventure.
Why Jackson? Like, what made Jackson feel like home?
Mentorship.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I think I looked at a few different places to live. The big three were Salt Lake and kind of Snowbird area, Whistler, Pemberton area, and Jackson. And I felt as if Jackson offered the best opportunity to learn from other skiers. Just a small town where I think when you meet someone, you're likely to run into them again at the coffee shop, in the lift line, at the post office, and kind of build that network of backcountry buddies. I think skiing can be such like a sneaky, exclusive sport and hard to find good partners that I thought Jackson kind of offered such depth in kind of the skiers here. I was excited to move. Yeah. And the terrain is rad.
Yeah, the terrain is definitely rad. And you're right. Like, it's very, like, it's a real mountain town. Like, I mean, Jackson, like, everybody in the ski industry has heard of Jackson. But, like, when you're there, it's, like, so small and quaint for such, like, the resort almost, like, takes the resort and the mountains, like, just kind of, like, take over the actual town, right? Like, that's the most important thing. And that's, I think, what draws so many people to that area.
Totally. I think that it has, yeah, that, like, connectedness and that remoteness, which comes with a whole, I think, spur of problems, too, around, like, housing and who has access to even live here. It's the richest county in the richest country in the history of the world. Jackson has the highest wealth disparity of anywhere in the United States.
Really?
So, yeah, it has its challenges as well, for sure. But I think for me, it, yeah, offered an opportunity to kind of start big mountain skiing and, like, learn a lot. I don't know if I'll be able to fully make it a home for the rest of my life. I hope to. But, yeah, we'll see.
Yeah. What have you found, like, your initial goal was, like, finding backcountry partners? Have you been, and, like, people to go skiing with, have you been able to do that? Like, have you been able to achieve that aspect of it?
Definitely. I think my partners have changed over time, especially as I've gotten, like, more and more into kind of, like, ski mountaineering. But I had a really great experience here being able to connect with people. I was lucky to have a few connections in the community before moving here. Veronica Paulson was a mogul skier and the first person I called when I was thinking of moving to Jackson. So very thankful for all of her advice and moving up here. And kind of from there, just started to meet people and kind of learn from them and then kind of align more and more with partners who wanted to go do the same things, had the same level of risk tolerance, had same kind of like education and knowledge that I wanted to like learn from and share with in the backcountry.
So your background is mogul skiing. How does that translate into skiing in the big mountains? Like, I mean, they're not the same thing. Like, they're not even close to the same thing, I feel like, but a lot of the same skills must translate, right?
Totally. Yeah. I think mogul skiing is sweet because it gives you such a, like, breadth of skills. You know, you can, like, grip fast on the groomers. You can handle, like, any type of terrain. You have a pretty, like, deep bag of tricks as well from, like, the aerial side where you're using, like, tilt twisting and doing, like, back pulls to, like, the freeride side where you're doing, you know, cork sevens. And I think that a lot of mogul skiers grew up seeing the whole mountain. So when I wasn't in the mogul course, we were, like, ripping around the mountain and, like, hitting natural features and skiing powder, where I felt like a lot of my race friends kind of trained just all the time. And at least in my ski background, skiing the whole mountain was really, like, key in developing as, like, an athlete. I also skied halfpipe and slopestyle and aerials, so kind of was all over the place all the time, which was really fun.
Yeah, like, what, do you miss it? Like, do you miss the competitive aspect of it, or have you kind of, like, filled that aspect of your life by just skiing in the big mountains?
I jump back and forth. I definitely miss competing and like having structure and like training.
Yeah.
I like getting to show up every day with like a coach whose job is to help me be like the best possible skier I can be, which is pretty rad. And actual mogul skiing too is just so fun. I think it's so challenging that when you like lay down a good run, like, you're just in like flow state and it just feels awesome. And then the rest of the time, it's like really hard and a struggle. But I've kind of tried to like mimic that same like structure in Big Mountain. And last season I was preparing to go to Denali and just like that daunting task and like the amount of weight you have to carry up there and the fitness level, like kind of needs some like rigid training. So it was like nice to have a calendar and have certain days where I needed to put in like certain hours and so much vert and things like that. So I definitely like the nerdy try hard side of skiing as well.
Yeah, I think for most people, like the idea of skiing moguls, by its never mind competitive moguls, is like extremely daunting, I think, to most people. So for like people listening, was it like that for you? Like, did you feel comfortable like right away doing moguls? Was that just like the thing you started doing in skiing and freestyle and slopestyle in general, you know?
Yeah. I was born in Telluride and that mountain is just full of moguls.
Yeah.
So definitely got into mogul skiing through natural features, where I ended up going to boarding school on the East Coast and there aren't really as many moguls. You know, it has to be a little bit like more manufactured, and they tend to be, you know, harder to form just with like the icy conditions. Where I think like mogul skiing is really like a vibe in Telluride. It's just what you do. You go like rip around the mountain. They have all these like great runs. So I think as like a little kid, I just like loved seeing the whole mountain. And then I really like got lucky stumbling into freestyle. My older sister Kroger had some friends and they were joining the bump club. So I like somehow convinced them to let me join the bump club as like a 6-year-old. And just like loved it. And then I started to get like hitting jumps and just totally was like, what? This is like my dream. Like, this is what I want to do forever. I love jumping and I love skiing bumps.
Yeah, I think to me, it's one of the most exciting aspects of skiing to watch. But like, it doesn't seem like it gets the kind of press and the kind of publicity that like some of the other aspects of skiing do. Why do you think that is?
It's so niche. And I think that mogul skiing has long struggled with making it understandable to the general public. Mm. I think the scoring system is really tough, and a lot of the runs look pretty similar to the untrained eye. And so alpine racing, you know that it's just the fastest person down, and you might not understand the technical like differences between like a super G, a GS, and a downhill, but you get that like the person is trying to just rip as fast as they right. can, and whoever has the fastest time wins. Where mogul skiing, you know, like the criteria keeps changing and it's like, okay, that person was faster, but their turn scores were less, but that person threw a harder jump. Like, it feels like a little bit like you're shaking one of those like magic eight balls and at the end you like get a winner, I think, to the general public.
Right. Yeah, I get it. It is confusing. You're right. And like you watch it and you're like, okay, these two people are like, even when they're head to head, it's like, you don't understand what's happening. It's just so much action in such a short amount of time, I think. And I think that to me has to be part of it too.
For sure. For sure. And I really love the duels format. That was my favorite part of mogul skiing. So there's singles where you just ski down by yourself, the judges score right. you, and you kind of progress through rounds, and then duels where you get to go like head to head. And there's been a big push to try to get duels into like the Olympics. But duels is so much fun and so cool because I think it has that sort of like competitive sport where you're like head to head against someone and you have to like charge at 100% instead of kind of trying to be perfect in your run. I think duels is all about like skiing through mistakes and it just ends up being so exciting.
Yeah, I think that that part of it, I think, is definitely more exciting, I guess, for just a random viewer. And I think that's who a lot of the industry kind of targets, is just like the random person that's just going to turn it on and watch it, you know, like that's because not everybody has a direct connection to mogul skiing or even freestyle skiing, I guess, you know, they kind of just want to watch it because they're looking for highlights. They're looking for action. They're looking for fun, you know?
Definitely. Yeah. And I think like slopestyle is starting to run into that same problem where it's hard to tell, you know, the difference between, you know, some triple and some double. And when you're having, you know, between like 1440s and
yeah.
so many spins, it's hard for people to like distinguish the different runs. But I think like nevertheless people are like excited about like the athleticism and like the stories behind them. There are so many like cool athletes, and getting to like hear their stories and their voices really like draws people back to the sport.
Yeah, I think in that respect, like, I agree with you. Like, it is cool. Like, a 1440 is really cool and a 1080 is really cool. But, like, nobody knows any of those numbers, right? Like, I think after a certain point, like, people are just confused. I think after 1080, none of the spin numbers matter to most people. Like, I mean, it definitely matters. Don't get me wrong. Like, I think it matters in terms of skill. Obviously, it's way harder. But I think people hear 1080, it could be the same thing as, you know, a 2500. You know, like, people, like, they hear the same. They're just like, they did an insane number of spins, basically, is what people get out of it, I guess.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. It can be overwhelming. On the flip end, I was, like, stoked in math class as a kid when we finally got into, like, circles and degrees. And I was like, oh, y'all are going down. Like, I know so many degrees off the top of my head.
I guess that's
fair. That was a highlight for sure.
All right. Well, I wanted to talk to you about doing the trifecta. You put out a video a few weeks ago. Is that right? Like, it's been 3 weeks now.
Yeah.
From last season, skiing the trifecta. So explain to people listening what the trifecta is, and kind of a brief synopsis of some of the lines.
Yeah, the trifecta is three lines that all have kind of like unique and difficult characteristics that you can link together in one backcountry run. So it's awesome. You take the tram up to the top of Jackson and you hike up Cody Peak to get to your first line called Central. And Central is this big, intimidating couloir with like a 25-foot cliff at the end. It's gnarly. It's really prominent. It sticks out on the peak and it's fun to point it out. And people are like, wait, you can see that? Like, wild. And then from there, you can kind of traverse over to a different run called Breakneck, which has two big cliff bands that run through it. So it's steep, it's exposed, it's blind rollover terrain that you kind of rip through. And then from there, you move over to the last little shot called Gothic, which is a 10 to 15 foot cliff drop into a super narrow couloir where you have to straight line it out. And it's pretty cool. They all have different aspects, different elevations. So it's a cool puzzle, not only in skiability, but also getting them to line up around like snow stability and conditions. So it's a real treat to kind of get to link these two lines and get your 4,000 feet of vertical in really extreme skiing in a day.
Yeah, it's crazy. At first when I was watching it, I was like, this is insane either way. Like, and then you're like, oh, we're doing it in a day. Like, that's a lot. Like, that. Like I'm watching it and it doesn't make sense to my head still, I guess. Like, how long does it actually take you to complete all three?
Yeah, with filming it takes a while because you like stand around,
yeah,
but
right.
Like 3 hours if
that's
you're
it.
Hustling, that's it.
That's nuts. And I will say, like, that, like, straight line bit, like that air into the straight, like that little couloir is insane to watch on video, by the way. Like, it's so narrow and there's like no room for air. Like, you have to land in the exact spot every single time, otherwise like you're going left or right and it's a wall. Like, that's got to be terrifying to be standing at the top of.
Yeah, I think it carries consequence because I know people who've like gone into the wall and I know people who've crashed. And so you're like, right, I like have to stomp this. I like can't get bucked. And so that's, I think, what's so exciting about the trifecta is in some ways it's like the three gnarliest lines you're going to ski all year, and then you're going to ski them all in a day. And it takes a lot of kind of like mental fortitude to just focus on one task at a time, to like let your adrenaline like recover, then like take some deep breaths and get back into the zone. And then to be just paying attention to the conditions the whole time too. Gothic is south facing, so you know your whole day that it's just starting to heat up. And it's going to be the last one you do. So that, I think, is tricky, again, in like time management and trying to get over there to make sure you still have soft snow and that the avalanche conditions are okay too.
Yeah. Yeah, that's insane. Did you have a favorite of the three? Was there one that you were like, I want to do this one again?
I think Gothic.
Really?
So the really hilarious part about the trifecta is I actually went to go scope it on Wednesday. The weather window was looking perfect. I've never skied any of these lines before. I wanted to kind of see what conditions at the resort were like. I had mostly been skiing backcountry. So I went out with my friend Laura Gaylord and one of my filmers, Josh Griffith, who ended up editing the project, to look at it. And I got to the top of Central and I was like, guys, this is awesome. I want to ski it. I want to ski it now. And my other filmer friend, Jasper Gibson, was driving up from Salt Lake, and he was planning to be there Thursday. And I looked at Laura, and I was like, what do you think? She's sort of like my safety expert and the person I trust my life to most, probably, around my decision-making. And she's like, you should definitely ski it. It looks awesome. And so Josh was like, I have an extra like GoPro in my pocket and a drone. Like, why not? So it was really fun. So I ended up doing the whole trifecta on Wednesday, and then got to come back on Thursday and do it again. And then on Friday, I'm still training for Denali. Ended up doing like a 7-hour tour with my friend. And then on Saturday, I filmed the segment for the double backflip portion of Jack of All Trades. And then on Sunday, I coached my Coombs kids, which is my like volunteer program. And I was like, wait, like what just happened this week? Like, this week was wild. But it was fun to do the trifecta and get to do it back-to-back days.
Yeah, that sounds like an insane week for one. And two, like, it's terrible. Like, a line like that that you haven't skied before, do you have nerves going into those things, or are you just so excited to do it that it doesn't matter in the moment?
No, I definitely get nervous, and I'm thankful because I think nerves really like add to getting focused. Sometimes when I'm not nervous for something that I know is consequential, then I'm like, like, what's going on? Like, why am I not kind of like getting focused? So I'm very thankful for my nerves. There's definitely, I think, a tipping point where it's too much and you get like jittery and sort of there's that like nerdy U-shape curve of performance where like stress helps your performance up to a certain level. And then once you like peak out and, you know, have too much stress, then it like decreases. So I definitely get scared. I think that Gothic is by far the one I was most scared for because it's really like instantaneous in your result. But sort of dropping into Central, I was like, oh, wait, like this is so within my zone. I think I had hyped it up in my head as being way scarier and way steeper than it was. And once I started to ski, I was like, oh, wait, I'm skiing at like 70% of my capabilities. I thought I was going to be skiing at like 85, 90% of my capabilities, but this is like just in my zone. Like I'm capable of doing this. And so it was cool to get to come back the next day and be like, yeah, I'm like still capable of doing this because it's within my zone. It's not me getting lucky and not tomahawking down this run. It's like really I'm capable, which I think was surprised me a little bit for sure.
Yeah, I mean, if you were just sitting at the top like to scope it and then you were like, oh yeah, I want to do this right now. Like I think that speaks to your ability to handle that situation pretty well. Because I think most people would be especially filming it too, right? Like if you're going to film a line that you've never skied before, like that's, there's got to be a lot of questions in your own head, I guess, about how you're going to handle it, right? Like all the like what ifs that go into skiing anything must pop into your head, especially if it's being filmed.
Yeah. And it's funny, I think my relationship with filming has changed a little bit. And I think those kind of lines are much easier for me than like the one turn wonder. I'm like terrible at the one turn wonder.
Oh, like ski
acting?
I'm
quite bad. Yeah, like ski acting. I'm quite bad at the like, see that snowball? You're going to make a turn there. And like, that's going to be the apex of your turn. And I'm like, I kind of have no idea what you're talking about. And I'm going to like blow this shot. I'm also a mogul skier, so I have my like super nerdy like mogul arms like poking through the snow.
Yeah,
and I just look like a nerd. And so some like filming like something like Central is cool because it's so obvious where you're gonna go that I can just put the trust in my filmers and just ski. Versus I think those like tight in close shots are way more difficult because it's really like such a collaboration in language between you and your filmer. Where I'm like, okay, like, I just want to go hit this big cliff. You see that big cliff, I'm going to hit that cliff. And they're like, okay, and I'll film it. Great.
You look so stoked on, like, I mean, just talking about it. And I was watching you in the film earlier and you're just like the whole time you're like high-fiving everybody. You're like so excited about the whole thing. And it's like that vibe is definitely infectious, I think, for people watching too. Like, just so you know that, I guess.
Yeah, I'm really like thankful that came out in the project. I think, it was interesting to know what ski objectives I wanted to do, but then have to kind of come together and think about how I wanted to tell that story in a film and make it very like humanizing and make it somebody, you know, relatable, that I'm not this like outlier, that I'm kind of just like a regular person who like works hard and like set these big goals. So I'm really thankful to my editor, Josh, because I think he just like crushed it in kind of making it like fun and relatable, less so than like as daunting and impressive as some of those other ski movies we see.
Yeah, the whole, I thought Jack of All Trades as a whole was great. Like it kind of, it really, like it hits everything. Like, I mean, you're doing a double backflip, which I want to talk about the face planting thing a little bit, because you mentioned it, you mentioned that you had thought about crashing like that beforehand. Like you, it was in your head kind of. That's, I think, the thing everybody is worried about when they do their first backflip. Never mind double backflip. Like, is like tips down, face right into the ground. Like, that's, I think, the number one, at least for me, like, that was definitely like, that's the thing that scares me the most.
Yeah, it's by far the worst crash, I think, to catch your tips, right? Because, like, you're putting your face, your head, your neck, and then really, like, scorpioning for your back at risk. When you crash, you, like, don't want to catch your tips for sure. And I rarely, like on regular backflips, have ever caught my tips. It's much more likely that I'll over-rotate than under-rotate. Mm. But as a jumper, I'm not particularly good at creating my own power. I'm much better at like having air sense and being able kind of to like come in and adjust in the air and stretch things down. But I'm pretty bad at like flat takeoffs or generating flip. So it's something I'm like continuing to work on for sure. But yeah, I was definitely like, I'd way rather go by on this backflip than like catch my tips. And I know that I'm not the most like powerful jumper, so like catching my tips is a real possibility. But again, I think coming back to like risk management, like I've hit jumps on that slope before, knew the snow was super soft, and it's kind of one of those like forgiving landings if you are going to make a mistake.
Yeah, and you went right back and tried it again same day.
Mm-hmm.
That's good for you. I mean, really, like that's, I think most people would be like, that's it. I'm done for the day. What makes you want to keep going and do these things over and over again?
Yeah, I talk about it just very briefly in the film, but I have failed a lot before. And we kind of like cut to a water ramping jump where I also go straight to my face. And I think as a mogul skier, and you have all these rounds and you have all these trainings, you like take some real crashes and you have to stop and evaluate and like kind of come get back on the horse. And I think it's then a question of, again, like, is this in my capabilities or am I like trying something that I don't have and it's not the right day? And so being able to have those practice moments of asking yourself those questions and having lots of reps of them. Because there have been days in mogul skiing where I've knocked the wind out of myself and like morning training and then still had to go out and compete that afternoon. And being able to kind of trust yourself and trust your skill capability and be honest with yourself as well, I think has really helped a lot. Mm. And then on the funny side of like being just like a semi-pro with like no support going into this project, eventually Fisher, you know, ended up being an amazing sponsor and helping bring it to life. But I'm paying all of my crew out of pocket.
Yeah.
And so I have one day to land this double backflip when my filmer who drove up from Salt Lake is here. And it kind of, you know, like makes that pressure real of like, I have to get this done because I don't know another time the weather window will be right or that my filmer's here. And I'm like paying for this out of pocket. I'm taking time off of work. Like, get it done now. But I like that pressure. That pressure like helps me perform.
Yeah, that's a crazy thought too, that like you're filming this thing and like there's no one necessarily supporting. And I guess like that's how most people would film anything, but like I feel like somebody should have been supporting you ahead of this project. Like I don't know if like I'm allowed to say that or not, but like I feel like some, like this should have already happened. Like what made you be like, I don't care if anyone's supporting the project right now, I need to do it like on my own? Like that's the hustle, I guess, that everybody talks about, is like it's going out and getting things done for yourself, right?
For sure. And I think it also like keeps it authentic, right? Like these three goals are three goals that I love and care about and mean a lot to me in my progression as a skier. So it was fun to frame a project around that, not necessarily frame a project around like, what will sponsors like? What will sell well? What's going to do this? Like it, I think that filming is like tough in that way, in which a lot of times, like the more legit you become, the less like authentic you get to say to like your type of goals. And you have like a big, you know, ski company or industry telling you what to do. Where like for me, this is like, if I had a filmer or not, I would still go do these goals. And that's how I framed this project. And then from there was like, okay, I think if I make it into a video, it'll help me with accountability. And it'll help me with getting resources and support to go do it. So it's easier for me to say, like, I want to land a double backflip, which has been a goal of mine for a long time. And now if I have a film project around it, now I'm, like, putting it on a calendar and having to stay accountable and, like, getting friends to come help me build a jump because they know it's, like, meaningful to me.
And you like that kind of, like, outside pressure. Like, that helps motivate you, because for a lot of people, like, then it doesn't do it for them, right? But the external pressure helps, you think?
Yeah, I think it's a double-edged sword for sure. I think that it has to come from like internal motivation from the start. And then I think, yeah, being able to jump on external pressure to like elevate performance is one of the things that just works in a lot of ways, right? There's a lot of skiers who perform best at the Olympics or best at the Super Bowl or best at any big event because their adrenaline is pumping. So I tend to be like pretty low on that, like getting stressed out. I like need some added stress to like help me perform well. And it can be internal or external. I think the double-edged sword part comes from all of these things that are dangerous and risky. And being able to step back and say, no, like today's not the day, like I'm not feeling it. and dealing with kind of like letting either yourself down or those external factors go is then the like trickier part of needing that.
Yeah, I think that's always the worry, right? Is like you're doing things. Are you doing it because a sponsor or somebody else wants you to do it, or are you doing it because you want to do it?
For sure.
So, but I guess that's different in this particular case because these were goals that you had ahead of even having a sponsor for this whole project, right?
Yeah, and I think people relate to the story above anything else. And I knew that if I failed at any of these objectives, being able to talk about why I failed was going to be a cool part of the story that's not always shared.
Yeah, got it. So 2020 is kind of like the year of staying home and like kind of like skiing your local resort and like nobody's really traveling all that much. Like you're lucky to have one of the best playgrounds in North America as your home at the moment. What do you have goals for this season? Like, what's the plan? Like, are you setting objectives or are you just like kind of wait and see approach?
Definitely. Yeah, it's been tricky for sure. I work at a hospital in a PT clinic, so I'm like well aware of like the implications of COVID and have seen, you know, we have patients who have been in comas and coming out of comas and doing physical therapy for neuro rehabilitation, and you get to see what that's like. So I think my COVID risk tolerance is very low. Mm-hmm. I've been very thankful actually to have avalanche education and like nomenclature and lingo to be able to talk about COVID in a lot of ways, because you can use the same kind of like concepts of risk tolerance and stepping out and lowest common denominator. So my COVID risk tolerance is low. I think that it's fun to still plan things, and I learn a lot and I gain a lot in planning things, even if they don't come to fruition. So my project to go ski in Denali with my friend Ian Kuo is back on the table. That was canceled last year. That is at the end of May. So hopefully has a good timeline around COVID, and also like gets me fired up to go to the gym and train and work hard this winter. So regardless if it happens, I think I'll still gain a lot. And then, yeah, really staying domestic. I think staying in the U.S., maybe traveling through there. Thankful to be a backcountry skier in a lot of ways with some previous experience. And spreading out, wearing masks works.
Yeah, it definitely works. It's funny, like, this is definitely, like, this is the first time I've ever bought a pass to, like, my local hill. You know, like, this is the year, I think, when people are, like, they're looking around and they're like, all right, what's around me? Like, what can I go and ski that's close to me, you know? I think the one thing that we're missing, especially like I think across the board right now, is snow. Like once we get that part of it, I think we'll be in a much better place.
Definitely. Yeah, very privileged to live in Jackson. I also come from a bogus skiing background in which, you know, for the last 20 years of my life, I lapped the exact same run 10 to 12 times a day and loved it. It felt like I got better at skiing every day. So in some ways, I'm like relatively easy to please.
Yeah, I guess that's
just like loving to ski.
I guess which that's I a think good is point. Like when you're nice trained to do the same thing over and over and over again, I guess when you have any kind of variability, even if it's not the best snow conditions, it's probably a good thing.
For sure. Yeah. And I also loved chopped up, you know, Mogul-y runs on the mountain. It's funny being in Jackson as a Mogul skier because I still love it. And Jackson is like not really a Mogul skier's mountain. And I like will always be like, oh, yeah, I used to be a Mogul skiing. Skier, people will be like, cool, I hate Mogul. They're like, cool, nice to meet you too, hope you have a great day.
Yeah, very friendly. Yeah, glad we did this.
Yeah, but it's cool. I don't know, I like the fitness side too. I like feeling getting stronger, so even if it's just skinning up Snow King, our little local hill, at night and then skiing back down, I think it's cool to see those fitness goals come to fruition. And any day in the mountains you can like learn so much, even if it's skiing places that you've skied before. And that was like big, I think, last year, is I actually stayed in Jackson almost the entire season. It was the least I've ever traveled, and I learned so much around snow and just getting to go ski the same things again and again, and then look at the weather report, look at the snow conditions, and do it every day in a week and see how things changed and really have like kind of a pulse on that. Was such a good learning experience for me.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, Sophia, where can people find Jack of All Trades? And then also, I didn't mention this, but your season edit also is full of just like
bangers. Like, it is so good. Like, so where can people find both of those things?
Yeah, to check out Jack of All Trades, head to fishersports.com/Jack of All Trades. I would try to spell that out for you, but I'm wildly dyslexic, so I trust that you are better served than that.
I'll include it in the show notes.
Yeah, Adam can put it in the show notes. And then follow on Instagram at Sophia Schwartz. Probably the best place to see content. Although anything I post is probably a week late because that's how I roll.
Awesome. That was episode number 131 with Sophia Schwartz. Once again, please watch all her edit, the Jack of All Trades, the whole nine. I've included all that stuff in the show notes. She's awesome and she absolutely rips. I feel like I should have known that, but she absolutely rips. So once again, go watch that stuff. Be sure to use promo code OUTOFBOUNDS at SkiTownAllStars.com and you can save yourself 20% on the coolest hats in the ski game. So next week we have, I think we have Katie Burrell on Tuesday. So we'll see what happens. All right. Bye.